You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
That would be a nice way to ease us into a brand new year of broadcasting here at TPC. Christmas feels so long ago, but what a fantastic run through the holidays we had. And by holidays, I mean, of course, Thanksgiving and Christmas exclusively. It was the Christmas season, and I really loved the presentation we put together for everybody throughout the month of December. But now the work does begin anew. Had a fantastic New Year's Eve broadcast last week with some of our program mainstays. Keith Alexander, you were out having a little bit of New Year's Eve reveling last week, but now you're back. You got to hear the show. I know you liked it too. Hold on. Let me get you. There we go. Now try.
Can you hear me now?
Now we got you.
Yeah, no, I'm saying it was a great show. I listened to the replay on it, and it was really good.
Well, we're going to try to make tonight's a good one, too. I felt as though last year was our best to date. I say that every year, but you do want to get better. If you're not getting better, you're jumping the shark. A lot of first-time guests. We're going to have more first-time guests, including one coming up this evening as we kick off a brand new year here, as I said, on TPC. Now, I'll give you the rundown of who's coming up, but just a couple of quick letters that I wanted to share with you. We had so many Christmas cards. If you sent in a Christmas card or a note in December, whether we were able to read it on the air or not, know that we loved it. We treasured it. This one, though, from Mike in Tennessee. Mike writes, Dear James, in the past year, I have become a disciple. After 70 years, I finally found two people that I can agree with on everything. You and keep up the good work. Merry Christmas. And Happy New Year, and that came in just a few days ago. How about this one? They all mean something. This one was unique, I guess you could say. Dear James, I've been listening to the show since August of 2009, and I'm excited to finally make a contribution. I can't wait to receive the incentive, and Happy New Year to you and Keith and your families. I look forward to more years of the show. Well, I tell you what. It took 13 years, but we finally won him over, and thank God for that. Hey, that's one of the guests we've got coming on tonight. Making his own victory lap is Harry Cooper in the third hour. He was the one who put together that great incentive package for us that so many of you have received and will still be receiving. We are still going to the post office every day. I'm happy to be able to do it. I'm happy that we're able to go to the post office every day because people are making these orders and making these contributions. But the post office experience itself is not a delight, but we're happy to do it for you. And we're still getting those out, so if you haven't received it yet, it will be in soon. Now, coming up tonight, you're going to hear for the first time from Chris Cantwell. Christopher Cantwell acted as his own attorney during the infamous Charlottesville trial. He's going to tell us about that experience and also what it was like to serve time with Viktor Boot, the Russian man who was recently at the center of international attention when he was traded in a prisoner exchange for Brittany Griner. Yes, he got to know him. Now, we're not going to probe too closely about the conversations, but I'm going to ask Chris just generally, what was this guy like? He was made out by the American media to be this terrible, terrible quasi-terrorist, I guess. Certainly couldn't hold a candle to the anti-American, anti-white lesbian Brittany Griner for whom he was exchanged. So we're going to learn a little bit more about that in the second hour and have a good time doing it. Journalist Jason Kessler is going to be on with us later this hour as we begin to talk about the news and current events that are taking place around us and ease back into regular programming after the Christmas season. But Christmas season isn't over yet. It is Orthodox Christmas. So for all of our Eastern friends, all of our Orthodox friends, we wish you a Merry Christmas tonight on this, the seventh day of January. Got a letter from a listener up in Canada. Dear James, thank you for your excellent work and standing for truth on your radio program. I do appreciate your courageous stand in the battle for truth. These are indeed evil days. During this Advent season, it is comforting to meditate upon our Lord Jesus' incarnation, and we hope the hope that we have because of his perfect life, death, and resurrection, but also to look forward to his coming again in glory as King and Judge and the hope of all who love him. I wish you and your family and Keith a very happy New Year. So thank you for that, sir. And here we go. Away we go, Keith. That was the preview. That was a little bit of the mailbag. It's all starting fresh here. First show of the year. I want to make mention very quickly that this is the ominous 15th anniversary. No, excuse me, 16th anniversary. It happened on January 6, 2007 of the Knoxville horror, the brutal black-on-white kidnapping, torture, rape, and murder of two young white college sweethearts. And as you'll remember, CNN had me on for one of my national TV appearances to talk with the then chairman of the NAACP about that. And during that interview, he told me that had the races been reversed, had it been a gang of five whites who kidnapped, sodomized, tortured, and then murdered two black sweethearts, that the media wouldn't have covered it at all. And you've heard me tell this story before. The only reason I'm bringing it up now, well, one for two reasons. I do want to remember the victims there in Knoxville. Channon Christian and Christopher Newsom were their names. And may we never forget those victims and work in their memory to make society a safe and saner place. But that exchange with the then chairman of the NAACP shows you how far from honesty, how far removed from honesty our opponents are. And it was brought back to my mind, that exchange, when I heard the black head of the D.C. National Guard say this week that police should have opened fire on the white people protesting the 2020 election irregularities. That is the two-year anniversary of, obviously, January 6th, which was yesterday. And the D.C. National Guard chief said that they should have been had fire rain down on them, should have been shot on sight, and he argued that the police would have fired on the crowd if the crowd were black rioters. So, Keith, I ask you, did he miss all of the George Floyd riots when blacks and their communist beatnik allies in Antifa were sacking police stations and burning down police stations and razing square blocks of major American cities to the ground? I don't remember anybody being fired on there. And that was a hell of a lot different. That's apples and oranges compared to the interlopers who walked into the Capitol with the police waving them past.
Look, these two guys must be totally unhinged from reality. It's just the opposite. You know, you were saying what would have happened if there had been a white gang torturing, raping, and killing blacks. Well, first of all, it would never have happened. It's like, you know, it's like the black on white rape statistics, which are about 100 a day every year, and the, on the other hand, white on black rapes, less than 10 every year, which probably means that there's none. This is, you know, all of the racial crime is a one-way street. It's from blacks to white. And if they don't understand that, they're just in denial. As they say, denial is not just a river in Africa.
Well, that's for sure. And I can't remember if we've mentioned this before. Now, the big topic of conversation this hour is going to be the election of the Speaker of the House. As pure political theater, I thought, as a political commentator and an observer, that it was far more entertaining than the Super Bowl. I do think that the Gates and Boebert faction got some decent concessions that are really going to put the cuck Chris McCarthy into a legislative straitjacket. I think that's good. I think that they did use their leverage to the best
Unless
of their ability.
Unless he's just lying to them and denying.
Well, I think it's some sort of a legal binding agreement. Obviously, they wouldn't take him at his word. I think it's a little bit, it's backed up by more than a handshake. But in any event, I have seen so many of the Trump former Trump allies. Now, Trump never did show a lot of loyalty to a lot of people like Jeff Sessions, but he certainly didn't get it back from those who he was propping up in the public eye. We talked about Sean Hannity, who was the biggest sycophantic Trump promoter that there ever was, backed the election denial claims. I've got no problem with that. But now that the tables have turned, Hannity's saying, I never believed in the big lie for a minute. I mean, I value loyalty and honor, and I I don't mind when bad things happen to people who can't exhibit those virtues. We'll be right back. We're just getting started. We're just getting started. Stay tuned, everybody.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs. While you're waiting, drop by our Confederate Corner for a free cup of coffee and good conversation. Remember, there are no strangers here, just friends who haven't met yet. Dixie Republic, we're not just a roadside attraction, we're a destination for our people. For more information, visit DixieRepublic.com.
Why does the left lie constantly? Because they get spiritual power from lying. The lies come from Satan, the father of lies. John 8:44. Here's how the political lying process works. Satan provides the beast with a lie. Then the more they use the lie, the more spiritual power they get. Look, the media is a lie multiplier, and this multiplication gives more evil, spiritual power to the beast, and that can overwhelm and even deceive the body of Christ, especially when the body is being disobedient to the head. The churches today are incorporated, so they're subordinate to human government. They obey the beast and do nothing to restore our national relationship with God. And the government shall be on his shoulders, Isaiah 9:6. That verse is not for the present-day church. Rather, it is for the end-time church, the body of the line of Judah. A message from Christ Kingdom Ministries.
All right, so welcome back. I was thinking during the break, did I tell these stories last week? But no, it was on the Sam Bushman show on Wednesday that we covered this, because I don't want to repeat myself if I mentioned this to you last week. But what I was saying was, I value honor and loyalty above all of the other traits and virtues, and I don't pity misfortune visited upon people who lack it. And that reminds me, here's Hope Hicks. Hope Hicks was this model, young girl who Trump promoted all the way up to be basically the face of his campaign, and to an extent his administration. And she was the one handling media during those early months. I've told you know the story about Donald Trump Jr., but Hope Hicks was one who was lying to the press about that. And I told her she was lying, and she knew she was lying. I said, look, y'all set the interview up. You emailed me, James Edwards@thepoliticalcesspool.org, and solicited it at appearance. Why are you telling the media you didn't know he was coming on the show, or he wasn't on the show? And so that kind of was a strike against her character, but I don't want to be a fly in the ointment at the time to Trump, because we had a lot of hope for him. But I see Hope Hicks is back in the news this week. So just like Sean Hannity, who is running like a scalded dog, really, that's giving
like
it too much
credit. Like a bad penny, they keep showing up.
Well, it's not even that. I mean, they're like rats from a fleeing ship. And so Hannity's throwing Trump under the bus now. So here's Hope Hicks. And she says that she's so mad at Trump. I'm so mad and upset. He made us all look like domestic terrorists. We're going to be perpetually unemployed now because of Trump. Nobody would have known this girl's name if he didn't make her a face of the campaign. So, you know, that's the thing. With us, don't betray your principles. Don't betray your brothers. Don't betray your race. And that's the way we do it. And through thick and thin, we're not going to betray people who are worthy of our support, even if it would further ourselves as an individuals. We got to remember we're not individuals.
Well, these
we're part of a collective.
It never does work out the way they intend it to. It's just like a Stalinist show trial. They can beg for forgiveness. They can admit to anything. And it never gets them anywhere with the mainstream media. So why do they do it?
Well, and the only reason I brought that back up was Trump was back in the news this week for once again making bad decisions with who his friends are and aren't. He endorsed Kevin McCarthy, but the whole thing, going through 15 votes, pretty historic. I think he got fleeced pretty good. I think I saw, we'll ask Jason Kessler about it in the next segment. I think Jason said he wasn't as impressed with the concessions. We'll see what he says when he comes on in the next segment. But in any event, I saw where the New York Times, at the time earlier in the week when there were still upwards of 24 Republicans voting against McCarthy, the New York Times did an article. And the article, the headline of the article is, "How far right are the 20 Republicans who voted against McCarthy?" And the Republicans who voted against McCarthy were categorized in three different camps: Black, Hispanic, and election deniers.
White people no longer count.
Election deniers. But anyway, what did you think about the whole show this week, Keith?
Well, I was happy to see it in one sense, because we've got to have a Republican leader that is willing to engage the enemy. We haven't had that for so long. As soon as the Republicans get in, look at the first 2 years of Trump's presidency. You know, he may as well have been George W. Bush. He basically allowed, what's that guy? The guy that had Eddie Munster's Widow's Peak, the guy Ryan or something, the guy from Wisconsin. He let him run the entire show. They got in his economic plan. None of the stuff that he ran on got made into law or even made any advance towards getting made into law. He turned on Jeff Sessions like a sidewinder. On the other hand, somebody like Rod Rosenstein can put three knives in his back and he doesn't notice. You know, it's really terrible to see what has happened. And I'm afraid that when we saw Trump come out for Kevin McCarthy, we're seeing that he hasn't learned anything from his first term.
That was the thing. I was thinking, okay, if he runs again, maybe he's learned from the relative failure of his first administration in putting all of the guys who are opposed to him in positions of power in his cabinet and in his administration. If he did it again, surely he would have learned by now, right? But no. I mean, he's go right back to it. So, you know, to hell with him for now. We'll see what happens. Maybe he can win me back.
I think the Democrats are going to have him prosecuted. You know.
Oh, did you hear what Sam Dixon said about that last week? We talked about that.
Yeah.
I said possibility. He said probability.
Well, what I would say is we've all heard the old canard that a prosecutor can indict a ham sandwich. Well, in New York, Washington, D.C., or Fulton County, Georgia, I'm afraid we're going to see that you can not only indict, but you can convict a ham sandwich.
That's it. All right. So after McCarthy finally got in on the 15th vote, I think it was the third longest, most contentious speaker election in the history of the country, he finally gives his welcoming speech as Speaker of the House, and he starts praising immigrants. I mean, right off the bat, I'm like, what good are they? They don't do it with, not the kind we're getting. They're not any good for this country. They're not any good for our people. Only to be outshined by what we saw from Hakeem Jeffries.
Now, here's minstrel show.
Here's another one. Yeah. So, Hakeem, you remember the time I got denounced by the United States Congress?
Absolutely.
Hakeem Jeffries was one of the congressmen at the time who asked to be recognized by whoever was presiding that particular session, and he said, "I want to go on the record to denounce James Edwards." And then they did it one by one in turn, just like if you watched any of these votes this week, that's how they did it with me. So Hakeem Jeffries now is the Speaker of the Democratic side of the aisle, and here was his opening speech. It utterly embarrassing and entirely fitting for America, I think. This is Hakeem Jeffries. It's 1 minute long.
Our new leadership.
House Democrats will always put American values over autocracy, benevolence over bigotry, the Constitution over the cult, democracy over demagogues, economic opportunity over extremism, freedom over fascism, governing over gaslighting, hopefulness over hatred, inclusion over isolation, justice over judicial overreach, knowledge over kangaroo courts, liberty over limitation, maturity over Mar-a-Lago, normalcy over negativity, opportunity over obstruction, people over politics, quality of life issues over QAnon, reason over racism, substance over slander, triumph over tyranny, understanding over ugliness, voting rights over voter suppression, working families over the well-connected, Xenial over xenophobia, yes we can over you can't do it, and zealous representation over zero-sum confrontation.
All right, so that's a speech before the United States Congress. And as I said, as embarrassing as it is, it's entirely fitting for modern-day America. It sounds like something you would get off of the woke Sesame Street programming now. Here's this guy literally shucking and jiving as he does this ABC sort of rap, I guess. And it's just, it is third world stuff. I mean, the United States Congress used to have men of merit that would be in the United States Congress. I mean, you might have to go back a couple hundred years, but they were there at some point. And now you've got this, just an utter...
A clown show.
Republicans are cucks. These Democrats are clowns. And when some of the black Democrats would get up to cast their vote for speaker during these 15 roll calls, a lot of them couldn't even just come up and say a name. They had to start singing or preaching or dancing. And it's just... It's third world. It's just... This is it.
You'd think this was the Congress of Haiti rather than the United States of America.
I mean, look at that. That is so unserious. And just... But that's who they are. That's what they are. And that's all they can be.
Denounce me?
I mean, I wouldn't put this guy in charge of... I can't even think of something he would be qualified to be in charge of.
He's not qualified for any job beyond being riding shotgun on the neighborhood garbage truck.
Anyway, so I'm glad I'm denounced by people like that on the floor of Congress, that's for sure. All right. Well, we'll see what Jason Kessler thinks about what happened in D.C. this week, because he was there. He was actually on the ground inside some of these congressional buildings. So he'll take us behind the scenes next.
Exposing corruption, informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm Dave Collins. New York Democrat Hakeem Jeffries is making history as the first black lawmaker to lead a party in Congress.
The American people, understandably after the events of this week, recognize that the Congress is at a fork in the road and are asking the question, what direction will we choose?
All 212 Democrats unanimously voted for Jeffries in the final vote for House Speaker early today. After Republicans took 15 ballots to finally elect Kevin McCarthy, Jeffries will take the place of Nancy Pelosi as Democratic leader. President Biden is congratulating Kevin McCarthy on becoming Speaker of the House. Biden released a statement today calling for bipartisanship, saying the American people expect their leaders to govern in a way that puts their needs above all else, and that is what we need to do. A Virginia teacher is showing improvement after being shot in the chest by a six-year-old student yesterday. The student was taken into custody at Richneck Elementary in Newport News. Police indicated there was an altercation between the teacher and the student before he shot her with a handgun. Newport News Superintendent Dr. George Parker III.
Today our students got a lesson in gun violence.
A Grammy-winning singer, songwriter, and arranger has died.
Alan Copeland worked with everyone, including Ella Fitzgerald, Frank Sinatra, and Bing Crosby. He performed with Robert Mitchell's Boy Choir and the Modernaires. Copeland eventually went solo and became a featured performer on Your Hit Parade. Among the songs he wrote,
come a little closer, make love to me.
And he won a Grammy for a mashup between the Mission Impossible theme and the Beatles song Norwegian Wood. The Hollywood Reporter says Alan Copeland passed away December 28th in an assisted living facility in California. He was 96.
That's Kenneth Burns reporting. This is USA News.
So right now may be the perfect time for you to rethink how you pay for health care. And here's why. Not only is it open enrollment for a lot of people, it's also a time you can join MediShare and save even more than usual. And it's true, the typical family switching to MediShare saves $500 or more a month, which is obviously huge for a lot of people, but what's more, they like it. MediShare has double the customer satisfaction rate compared to health insurance. Double. There are 400,000 members. They've shared over $4 billion in medical bills, and it really is a great community, too. People encourage and pray for each other. And here's the thing. If you join MediShare Complete right now, they'll waive your new member fees, and you'll save an additional 10% off all of 2023. That's right. No fee to join. 10% off every month of next year, but it's a very limited time offer. You have to sign up before January 15th. Great savings, great health care. Find out more. Call now. 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
Our very first guest of the new year is journalist Jason Kessler, returning to the program this evening to talk about the trip that he made to the U.S. Capitol just a couple of days ago, which, of course, coincided with the historically contentious bid for the Speaker of the House, which we've been talking about here so far tonight. So Jason's going to be back with us right now to describe what it was like to be in those congressional office buildings and what, if any, opportunities there might be for us there. Jason, how are you? Welcome back and Happy New Year.
I'm great. Happy New Year. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's always a pleasure. First of all, before we get to your experience in D.C. this week, which I was absolutely fascinated by, we'll talk about that in just a second. But when the red wave didn't manifest itself anywhere outside of the shores of Florida, I said very early on, everybody was expecting a big Republican landslide, myself included. I thought that they would do better. And we know now why they didn't, and that's been talked to death. But I said, you know, if you think about it, before anybody was thinking about what happened this week, I said having a slim majority will actually empower some of the ones that might be a half step or so closer to our positions on some of the issues. And it's not all of a bad thing. I said, in some ways, it might even be better. What do you think about what happened this week, Jason? And is having that slim majority, was it any good for us?
Yeah, I think we're learning a lot about that dynamic. I mean, it seems like having more Republicans might help pro-white issues. But as we all know, that's not actually how it plays out in reality. So after this speaker's hearing, we know that there's about 20 Republicans in actuality in Congress who actually have some spine. They might not be exactly where we want them on all of the issues, but as far as this corrupt pig machine that is pushing these outrageous omnibus bills with funding for more J6 investigations and every crazy anti-white group under the sun, you know, these people might at least have some opposition to that.
Jason, this is Keith Alexander. What is your understanding of what concessions were wrung out of Kevin McCarthy by the 20 people?
Well, to be honest with you, I mean, I don't think the concessions were all that great. The one that is being touted as the most potentially important is that any member of Congress can initiate proceedings for the removal of the Speaker of the House now. So Matt Gaetz has gone on a number of these programs talking about, well, if we can't get rid of Kevin McCarthy, we can at least put him in a straitjacket. And that's what they mean by this. So even though this stalemate has ended, it gives the opportunity for these Freedom Caucus members to initiate another stalemate and grind Congress to a halt if there's ever an issue that comes up that is particularly against their interest. Some of the other things were holding a hearing based on, you know, term limits for elected representatives and having a 72-hour window between when one of these massive bloated omnibus bills are proposed and when members can actually vote on it, so that there's at least a little bit of period of time where this thing can't just be rammed through immediately.
Well, I'd heard something about there was going to be a release of documents by the that have been accumulated or collected by the January 6th Commission, and on the other hand, that we're going to have something akin to the Church Commission looking into the FBI. Is that do you have any details on any of that? Was that part of the deal, or is that something that was gone with the wind and forgotten?
Well, that's fascinating, but none of the articles I've read have said that that was a specific concession. It doesn't mean that it wasn't one of the concessions, but I know that that has been a suggestion that has been going around. I don't think that that's just the Freedom Caucus that has been pushing for this kind of Church Commission either.
All right, Jason. Well, let's talk about this. As I said, I was entirely fascinated. And in fact, as soon as I saw it, I got in touch with you and said, hey, I'd already planned out the show for this week, but I'm going to take away two segments of things that we were going to otherwise talk about because I'd love to have you on to talk about actually being there while this was going on. You were inside some of these buildings. Where did you go? What did you see? Who did you rub shoulders with? And what were you there for?
Well, I was there to get a sense of what the atmosphere was outside of this U.S. Capitol building because I've lived in that area for a number of years. And it's part of the matrix that we're forced into that political dissidents like ourselves are never supposed to come in contact with our elected representatives and the people who actually hold any power in this country. Once the media smears you and attacks you, it's supposed to be like you don't exist anymore. But actually, in real life, we have an opportunity we don't have through broadcast mediums. We can just go somewhere where these people are. And I went there and I was able to actually run into some interesting people. Like I saw Kellyanne Conway outside of the U.S. Capitol, and I was able to ask her opinion on the Kevin McCarthy hearings. She apparently is supporting Kevin McCarthy, which I think is unfortunate, but she's not alone in that. Donald Trump is as well. And it really does present an interesting opportunity for us, I believe, even though the federal government is beyond saving at this point. And, you know, we're fortunate to get the minor amount of concessions that the Freedom Caucus got out of this whole situation. But it doesn't mean that we can't go there and voice our opinions and bring out some of the inherent contradictions in what's going on in our government. What I saw was a lot of like Black Lives Matter flags, a terrorist group in the minds of many Americans, outside the offices of some of these radical Black Congress people. You know, I saw transsexual flags and all manner of anti-American, anti-white propaganda. And yet there's a palpable feeling that if you're pro-white and were to voice that concern to any of these representatives, you've been treated like a terrorist or a domestic enemy.
And you name some of the offices. You were right outside the door. You posted pictures of this, which, again, I found very, very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, Cori Bush is one that comes to mind. She's a radical Black supremacist from Missouri, and she had the Black Lives Matter flag and Antifa flag. I was also outside of the office of George Santos, who's been in the news because he is a New York representative who I guess was pretending to be Jewish because
he saw Elizabeth Warren try it. And
why not?
Yeah, Elizabeth Warren, if she can be an Indian, he can be Jewish, and everybody wants to climb up the ranks of the diversity totem pole.
I like what he said. He said, I'm not a Jew, but I'm Jewish.
Yeah, he said, I'm Jewish. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so there was all that kind of stuff going on, and a lot of the virtue signaling you would expect. Almost every office had a We Stand With Our Brave Capitol Police signs and Ukraine signs and this kind of thing. But I think people maybe should think about how pro-white dissidents can voice their concerns to these people, if nothing else, just to get it on tape that these people don't give a damn about us.
Yeah. Jason, let me ask you this. What do you think about Trump's endorsement of Kevin McCarthy? Was that a plus for his campaign, a minus? To me, it looks like he hasn't learned anything from his first term.
And Marjorie Taylor Greene, too. I mean, that was perhaps even more eyebrow-raising.
Yeah, I think that it's really shameful. Trump was a man of the moment in 2016. He was of the vanguard, and he still had a significant amount of the base in 2020. And it's not that he doesn't have a huge platform still, but I think he's behind the times. And some of the rising MAGA stars like Matt Gaetz, I think, got their opportunity to shine
by saying
things like, well, we support President Trump. He's our favorite president, but I don't agree with him on everything. He's had a major problem in the HR department. When you see the people he's hired, like John Bolton and all of these other.
I saw John Bolton is running against him.
Yeah, that's right, Keith. Yeah. Bolton said he's going to run in the Republican. Hey, Brad Griffin had a great line on that. Why is he running in the Republican primary? All the neocons are Democrats now. But Bolton was a good one. But, yeah, I liked
John
what
Barr
Gaetz did and Boebert. And Keith, I bet you'd like to have a – Keith's single, so I can ask him this. You'd like to have a policy session with Boebert, wouldn't you?
Well, I like her attitude. I tell you what, I think more highly of her now than I do of Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Oh, there's not even in question. Yeah, anyway, Jason,
Boebert's a trooper, and Marjorie Taylor Greene really shamed herself by not only taking Kevin McCarthy's side, but sort of spitting in the face of the base by rushing once he became speaker to take a selfie with him, smiling and grinning.
Yes,
it just seemed to be a middle finger to the face of the base who had a problem with Kevin McCarthy.
That's absolutely right, and so we'll see where it goes. We'll see what, if anything, the concessions get us. One line of thinking was we had a chance to win, and those chances are few and far between. We should have gone for the jugular. On the other hand, some concessions are better than what we normally get, which is none at all. So we'll see. I did like the theater as it was manned by Gates and Boebert, who, to the very end, never voted for him. I think they voted present at the very end. But we'll be back with Jason Kessler, journalist Jason Kessler. Check him out at jasonkessler.us. You can find him in other places as well, a regular contributor to VDare and our good friend Peter Brimlow. jasonkessler.us. One more segment with Jason, and it's coming up right after this.
I'm Michael Hill, president of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C., and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. Call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
Do you know what is great about America? Ask an Immigrant. Ask an Immigrant is a new podcast dedicated to helping Americans, especially our youth, value, appreciate, and be grateful for the freedoms we have here in America. Join host Lydia Wallace Nuttall as she interviews immigrants from around the world to discover their inspiring personal stories about why they came to America. To learn more about why America is the most prosperous, greatest country in the world, download the Loving Liberty app or go to lovingliberty.net.
Small Business Tech Guys is a team of experts ready to assist you with any service relating to growing your business. Our team specializes in information and technology, social media, general consulting, and HR. We thrive on assisting startup entrepreneurs with growing their businesses. If it's small business, it's our cup of tea. To schedule your free discovery call today, consider sbtechguys.com. We keep an eye on tech, so you don't have to. sbtechguys.com.
Back with Jason Kessler for one more segment, and we will have to make haste because we could have gone easily an hour with Jason. I want you to be sure to follow him, support his work, and we'll get him to plug where all the places you can find him. JasonKessler.us is a good place to start, but he's got a new live stream that he is working on, and we give him the opportunity to talk about that in just a second.
Jason, let me ask you this. Wandering through the Capitol, was that a stroll down memory lane? What did you think about did it occur to you that this is the 2-year anniversary since the infamous, or 3-year anniversary?
No, it's two. Yeah, two.
Two-year anniversary of the so-called insurrection.
Well, think of that answer, Jason. And let me also ask you this because I want to move on to the Charlottesville situation that has been in the news a little bit, thanks to you this past few days. But Keith's question, and also before we depart from this matter of conversation, I thought it was great to have one of our own there looking for some of these, as you called it, drop interviews, where we come up, we have every bit as much right as anyone to ask a question and seek a comment from, as you put it, our elected representatives. And it dawned on me as I saw you there and walking around and posting pictures and videos, why don't any of the alternative media outlets have people doing that. I mean, that's where our people should be. It's just like the light went off.
Well, first to Keith's question, obviously the U.S. Capitol looks naked without all of those patriots there, many of them with Confederate flags. I mean, it just looked awesome to have the people. That was living. That was energy. It was electricity. And now it's just, you know, the whores, you know, that are put there by the donors.
You talk about gaslighting. What they tried to get our people to believe about January the 6th is the classic case of gaslighting.
But in terms of James's question, yeah, I was going up there as an experiment. Can I go up there? Is it safe to go and ask questions? And you know, I'm a famous person in some ways. You know, I was in a lot of news articles, but no one bothered me. I could go up there. I could speak to the elected representatives. I was able to go into one of the local bars where the congressional aides were meeting and get information from them about what was going on in the vote. I met some aides for Eli Crane, who is one of the dissenters from Arizona, and they told me he is not going to vote no matter what for Kevin McCarthy, and that ended up being the case. He was one of the guys who ended up voting present in the end, like Matt Gaetz and the others. But I think there's tremendous opportunity there, and that's something that I'm going to be pitching to some of the journalists in our movement. It's why don't you have me do some on-the-scene journalism? Let's extend our power into the heart of the beast.
Because these congressmen, and I guess you have to say congresspeople now, because there are women there too, but they are accessible. They come right out. I mean, they're walking around the streets to go from building to building and place to place, and they're very accessible.
Let me ask you this.
Your comment on that, Jason, and then to Keith.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the only thing is just that it's resource intensive to get into D.C. because you don't want to park in D.C. There's a ton of vultures trying to tow your vehicles and so forth. And like I was seeing with the CBS News people who are camped outside of George Santos's office, sometimes you got to wait there like all day. So you got to have funding. You got to have some institutional support, but I think that it's something that our movement should think about because it would be a huge power move. And yes, those people are just walking around. They have tunnels underneath the street that go from the office buildings into the U.S. Capitol, but many of them are just out there in the front. And that's how I was able to meet Kellyanne Conway. I think Laura Loomer was out there and saw Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. There's a guy named Alex Stein, who often, you know, interacts with Marjorie Taylor Greene and AOC and these people, and we can absolutely do it ourselves. They want to censor any discussion of pro-white stuff. We can make it happen, literally, with the most powerful and influential people in the country.
Keith, you've got a question, then I want to move on to Charlottesville. But, yes, both you and Loomer got questions and answers from Kellyanne Conway and AOC, respectively. Keith?
I was going to ask you what you think the future holds for Matt Gaetz and for Lauren Boebert. What do you think they're going to follow this up with? How are they going to be a factor in steering the new Congress?
Well, I was highly impressed by these two, you know, and they're professional politicians. They know that doing a stunt like this that puts them in the spotlight is going to increase their profile. And I do believe that they were doing it on principle as well. So it's a win-win for them. And for somebody like me, I don't put a lot of stock in the political process. But as far as that goes, these people are making their brand about principle and having a spine in compared to the rest of these people who are totally at the behest of the donors. So I'm liking these guys. I'm liking them in comparison to Trump and anybody else that's in the field.
And then, of course, you know, it is almost like an apples and orange comparison there, too, between Gaetz and Boebert, because Gaetz won his reelection comfortably. And I think between the three of us here, we could have swung Boebert's election. So she won by just literally a handful of votes. But I hope she stays. Okay, so let's move to Charlottesville. Now, I was talking, I want to say this publicly. I was talking with Jason earlier this week, and of course, Jason's always going to be inextricably linked with Charlottesville because he was the man of the moment.
He's the main guy.
Yeah, he was the one who took out the permit. back at a time in 2017 when we still thought that white people had the right to take out a permit to demonstrate on the public square and have their freedoms of speech and assembly be honored. And I had done that, too, and I told Jason about it, not nearly to the scale of what Charlottesville was, but I had pulled out a permit two or three different times to defend Confederate monuments, and it got news coverage and a couple of hundred people and 500 people, respectively.
And we beat Al Sharpton.
It's all been in the news. And I said, Jason, you know, what happened to you could have just as easily happened to me. I pulled out a permit expecting that we would have our basic civil rights be defended, that the police would do their jobs. Nobody could have anticipated that the police would have allowed the Unite the Right in Charlottesville event to descend into anarchy, that there would be a trap laid by conspirators, including perhaps the governor and the state troopers and everybody involved. I said, Jason, what happened to you could have just as easily happened to me if the system had willed it.
And they led you into a trap.
Anyway, so this is the point I went back to earlier. If somebody proves himself to me to be a stand-up guy, I don't care what the internet says. I don't care what the press says. I'm going to stand by him. So it's an honor to stand shoulder to shoulder with Jason Kessler because he didn't do anything wrong in trying to defend a monument to the man who I believe was the greatest American, Robert E. Lee. So, Jason, with that being said, and that being the case, just before we get to what happened with the verdict this week and the latest news on that, just tell the audience who you are, who you really are. Are you a Southern nationalist? Are you a civic nationalist? Are you more? Are you less? Let the audience know. Remind them.
Well, I guess I mostly consider myself a paleo-conservative with libertarian tendencies. But I support our people. You know, I'm pro-white first and foremost. And so I support all of the movements that are moving that ball forward, whether that's white nationalism, Southern nationalism, people who are pro-white civil rights activists, whatever the case might be.
All right. That's fantastic. And then so we know, and we covered Charlottesville the night that it happened. I have said this before. I doubt this will be the last time I say it. But if you go back through what is this will be now later this year, our 19th year on the air, 18 full years now into number 19, and or approaching 19 rather. If you go back, you say, "Give me one show to listen to." If you got one show, we got a lot of shows, a lot of great guests, celebrities, the Buchanan interviews. I mean, you name it. But I said, you know, pound for pound, dollar for dollar, if you want one show, go to the show. From the night of Unite the Right, because we were live on the air. Our program is every Saturday night.
We had a representative there.
And we had a lot of people on that were there. And just to hear the eyewitness testimony of what was taking place and compare that now to the media's narrative of it is just totally
jarring.
It's
quite obvious that you were led into a trap.
But
and it's amazing it wasn't bloodier than it was.
I agree with that.
Well,
I do agree with that.
Direct correlation between how much any given event actually represents our interest and how much the enemy is going to attack it. You know, we should do everything to defend the January 6th people, but make no bones about it. Charlottesville was the event where we were explicitly pro-white, and there's never been an event of that scale, you know, in this era that, yeah, you know, people can point to. So we should defend it with everything we've got.
Well, Jason, let me ask you this, because we only got 2 minutes left, and I knew we wouldn't have enough time with you. My point in bringing that up a moment ago was we've covered Charlottesville from the day of it through the trials, and I think we did a month of programming during the trial fall before last, and now there was some news on that. What is the news? What happened in the last few days, and what kind of coverage has it gotten?
Well, like we were expecting, the verdict – the amount that the plaintiffs got from us is coming way, way down. They had originally gotten a $26 million verdict, $24 million. So the vast majority came from something called punitive damages, which is not related to compensatory damages. Compensatory is the value of the actual injuries. Punitive is just the jury saying, this is how much we don't like these guys. So the vast majority of it is then just saying we don't like you. But you can't do that. Under Virginia law and under federal law, there has to be some kind of proportionality to how much they say we are charging you because we don't like you. So Virginia has a cap of $350,000. So this widely touted number that these Jewish and Democrat elites who sued us have been telling all of their media buddies, 26 million, 26 million, 90% of it got wiped out. Even the Jewish media, like the Telegraph, is reporting on this. But originally they weren't. No one was reporting on it for days. And I thought, what in the world is going on? So actually, all of the news articles that you see about this, Washington Post, Jewish Telegraph, it all started because I contacted a local reporter in Charlottesville and said, why aren't you covering this?
Yeah, I mean, it was heralded, crowed from the mastheads of every news outlet when the verdict was initially handed down. But the final score, well, barely made a blip. And it wouldn't have made a blip at all had it not been for you. Jason, we'll talk to you again soon. You want to know more about Jason Kessler, find out who he really is. How can they find you, Jason? We got about 15 seconds.
Go to jasonkessler.us. On that page, you will see links to my Odyssey, where I've got my live streaming channel. That's the main thing. Go and subscribe to my Odyssey. But you also see my Telegram and my Twitter right there on jasonkessler.us.
Follow him at Twitter. I do. And that's why he's here tonight. I saw what he was doing in Washington. Jason, I would love to see you in Washington more, doing what you did this week. We'll talk to you again soon, brother. Stay tuned. Hour number two up next, everybody.